So the President's report, you're up, Mr. Cirio. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. Good morning. I'd like to talk to you this morning about a couple of different topics, our upcoming rate filing, where we landed on reinsurance, the status of our depopulation and our forecasted policy counts and exposure, and finally, what we have done in preparation for hurricane season. As you all know, first we began to file with the Office of Insurance Regulation our 2025 rate requests, which were approved by the board at the last meeting. Our staff is in regular contact with the OIR about the logistics of these filings, and we should have the last of the items filed, complete and filed by the end of this week. And as you know, our overall rate request seeks an average increase of 13.5%. Could you go to the first slide, please? For the personal multi-peril policies, the uncapped indication is 23.1%. The uncapped indication means on average statewide, that is what the increase would need to be for us to be actuarially sound. The non-competitive indication is 92.8%. That is what would be required statewide for us to be non-competitive. And I do need to say that the way, you know, we're trying to wrestle and provide meaningful data to the Office of Insurance Regulation of what it means to be non-competitive. As you all know, we procured we went through a public procurement to be able to have a service that enables us to gather this data and present it in a better fashion. And under this scenario, that 92.8%, the way that Brian Donovan, our chief actuary, he's done a great job, and the way he's wrestled with this, that 92.8% basically gets us to the top. We would be in the top 25% price bracket. That's not even the most expensive. So I did want to point that out, to make you all aware of that. When we were, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, when we had a more of a statutory formula for what it meant to be non-competitive back, you know, until the early to mid-2000s, we were the most expensive. We were tied with number one, or we were slightly more expensive than number one. This is just, this indication gets us to, sort of, as I said, the top 25%. The industry's rates, of course, remain significantly higher than Citizens, and the proposed rate change is capped at the 14% glide path, which is why we get really to an average of 13.9%. For the personal lines, wind only, there isn't really adequate competition out there, so there isn't a competitive analysis available. The uncapped indications for this business, again, uncapped indication just means actuarially sound, is 73.2%, while the capped is 15%. The proposed rate change is 15%. The reason this is higher than the 14% glide path is due to the amount of non-primary homes that are not subject to the cap that is in this business line. That's why the average is a little bit higher. The commercial lines does not have a competitive analysis. The commercial non-residual rates. Commercial non-residual rates are, for the most part, actuarially sound. Where the commercial residential business still has a ways to go. So the proposed rate change works out to 10.3% for commercial, and that's where we get to the average rate change, the proposed rate change of 13.5%.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
I asked you to prepare some charts for us. I suspect you don't have
them. Oh, I have a chart.
I'm sorry?
I have a chart. I hope that answers your question, but there is some chart showing where we diverge from the industry. Yes,
okay.
Yes, Chairman.
Is there any way we can get those thrown on the screen?
Yes. I might throw me for a loop. I am getting to it if you'll give me a moment.
Oh, okay.
I will get to it.
All right. I didn't know if that was part of your presentation.
No, Chairman, I'll just fall flat on my face if I get out of my rhythm here. But we can jump to it if you like.
Do that.
All right.
Just a question.
Of course.
And I know, Tim, I apologize in advance, it's getting to be a presentation, but I think the points that you just made, I actually thought you
went through your points relatively fast.
Okay.
And there was some comments that you made, that may not be fully appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would ask that you step back for just a second, particularly as it relates to the biggest element of the in-force premium number there that you've got with the personal multi-peril policies. And I heard you, but in the personal wind only, I heard you talk about why it was 15%.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should step back and just re-describe those first two items. Why 15%, the secondary home market, and, you know, what impact that is, and reminding a broader audience, you know, where Citizens is on that and why. And then a little, I think you should just, again, take one step back just on the glide path, proposed rate change, and where specifically Citizens is positioned in the competitive marketplace.
I will,
again, keeping in mind, we are a market, we're intended as a state body to be a market of last resort.
Governor Lightdecker, I will do that now, but also I've got about 10 minutes on that topic.
Yeah, it's your,
so
your life.
I think that's a very important point, and that's something that we wanted to stress, because one of the things that I think is very important is that not just our Citizens policyholders, but our listeners understand why we're doing what we're doing. Nobody is thrilled to propose a rate increase, right? We think that the law and the market requires us to ask for what we've asked for. Obviously, the ultimate decision is with the Office of Insurance Regulation. But if we go back, again, when we talk about the personal multi-peril, the non-competitive, you know, we're required to be now actuarially sound and non-competitive. If we were just actuarially sound, the company, because of some inherent advantages we have as a government-created entity, we're tax-exempt, we don't have to buy as much reinsurance as the private market, we have advantages, government-instilled advantages over the private market. So if we are actuarially sound, we will still be highly competitive and in many cases still cheaper than most of the private market. That is why we are now also required to be non-competitive. Most insurers of last resort, if not all of them around the country, are non-competitive, or in other words, slightly more expensive than private market. And the idea is, you have nowhere else to go. We're the insurer of last resort. We're going to pay a little bit of a higher price, but in return for that, you have the certainty and the comfort of knowing your claims are going to be paid because of our assessment authority. A lot of times, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but a lot of times the term is used of Citizens that were backed by the state of Florida. I want to be very careful, because that's not technically accurate. Backed me almost means, like, you know, there's general revenue that must be deployed. That's not true. What we are, though, is we have statutory authority and a statutory mandate to levy assessments if we can't pay claims. That is the assurance that Citizens policyholders have, and that's why and I'm going to talk a little bit about this. That's why it's a fair deal for them, for our policyholders. We want to provide good service to them while we have them, but hopefully as the market recovers, many accept a smaller number of policies that the private market will never be interested in, really, because of the characteristics of the property and their location. Hopefully those policyholders that aren't in that category will eventually move back into the private market. They'll have better policies, more comprehensive coverage. You know, Citizens, you get a good policy, but it's your meat and potatoes policy. It's not a Cadillac policy, right? So that's the goal. Wind only, again, there's really, we don't have a lot of non-competitive data, but the uncapped indication is so high. You know, we believe that, and Brian can come up and explain it in more detail if you'd like, but that's why it justifies the average proposed rate change of 15%. And the reason it's 15 and above the 14% glide path is because you have so much business in that line of business that is exempt from the glide path because it's not a primary home. Non-primary homes are they still have a bit of a glide path, but it's up to 50% of what it would take to become actuarially sound. It's a little more complicated than that, but it's outside the glide path. If you like, I can have Brian come up,
but I'm going to hit on your topics further
in my report.
And I'll wait. I just think you did a nice job of synopsizing and, you know, giving a macro view of why this is so significant, and also the balance between so many moving parts and trying to create a kind of competitive market, a competitive landscape in the state of Florida, so we can begin the process of trying to reduce rates in the future.
We have an thank you, Governor. We have an obligation to be here for the people of Florida when they have nowhere else to go. When the market, and you know, you have business cycles, and if the market tanks, we need to be there. And as we expand and grow, that's fine. That's our job. That is to be there. But I think by having rates that are artificially low, it hampers us as the business cycle returns to a normal course, as the market, you know, recovers, it hampers our ability to shrink back down. It should be a bit of an accordion. We need to be there for the people of Florida when they have nowhere else to go, but we shouldn't hamper a return to of these policies to the private market, who otherwise would be in the private market if it were healthier. We shouldn't hamper that return by having artificially low rates. So again, more on that in a moment.
Mr. Chair, if I could quickly just follow up on one small point within that conversation. So in your second category there, personal wind only, as I understood what you said, that includes second home owners.
It does.
And my understanding is that that's an average of 15%, but 15% on that chart is doesn't tell the whole story, because mm-hmm. a lot of those second homeowners are going to see increases much larger than 15%. Is that correct?
Brian, can you come up for a moment? Because, Governor, that can be correct, yes, because what it is it's 50%. It's a bit of a complicated formula, but it's up to 50% of, I think, to be actuarially sound. Is that correct? Let me just turn it over to our chief actuary.
And so just specifically then, understanding is that some second homeowners are going to experience increases as much as 50% or more. So when you put 15% as a proposed rate change, and then somebody gets an increase of 50% or more, it's startling. And so I think when we present that kind of information, the proposed rate change is 15%, that's not entirely accurate. Because from person to person, policyholder to policyholder, they may experience a rate change far in excess of that. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't argue it's inaccurate, Governor. I would say you're right that it's not getting into the granular detail. And I do think it's important, Brian, to talk about the actual statutory language because it's a little.
Excuse me, but I think the question from the Governor is simply that some people will get much significantly larger increases. And the answer is yes or no.
Secondary homeowners. He's asked.
Correct. Right. Secondary homeowners.
Yeah. Secondary homeowners can get an increase up to 50%.
So we need to be clear. We're not shying away from the responsibility of clarity. The answer is, though, overall, the personal wind will get we propose a 50% increase. Some of the policyholders could get as much as a 50% increase.
Correct.
Okay, so there you have it. It's public now.
Yep.
I would just add that over Citizens' total book, only 6.7% of the policies fall into the non-primary category.
Well, you know, as one who's probably not going to be very favored after I make the following comment, the fact that we shouldn't be in the insurance business at all, but we are because of necessity, okay, because we have to cover people in the state of Florida who can't get insurance elsewhere. The idea that we're in the secondary home market at all is alien to me. So I don't have a problem with that.
It's a very good point, and we do want to be transparent about that. I just 6.7%, it's still me. I mean, if you're the one getting the bill, it's pretty meaningful, right? Well, so
but if you're in a if you're second home, we shouldn't be subsidizing second home owners.
But we are.
I understand. But we need to get more out of that business.
Yes, sir.
And frankly, I think that's a conversation that we should have. It's a line we want to carry or not. But, the fact of the matter is we are. And so let's just make sure we understand the information. You look at 15%, you think 15%, well, it's in line with the rest. But then somebody else gets an increase a whole lot larger than that, and that creates a little bit of controversy. So
that's a very public relations problem.
Get the information out.
It's a great point, Governor, because again, if 6.7% of the policies are making that average and wind only go up 1%, that's significant.
So I believe the conversation it brings up is, I agree with the chairman. I don't think we should be in that line of business. But, is there something we can do to create a private market for it? And what can we do to provide another alternative for those second homeowners? Because like it or not, there are a lot of second homeowners in the state of Florida. What are they going to do?
But the answer is become non-competitive and be actuarially sound on behalf of citizens in the meantime. And I think that's your point. How do we, you know, we are more concerned with primary homeowners in the state of Florida
right.
than we are with secondary homeowners, but we are a market of last resort. So if we don't handle it, who's going to handle it?
You know,
but you can at least make it non-competitive.
Advocate for people taking care of their own problems. If you've got a second home, you can figure it out.
I would.
And Mr. Chairman, may I also would like to throw in also, where you need to throw in the non-residential commercial. We don't need to be insuring that either.
There's a good discussion that this board could have about, you know, at one level, certain things would require a statutory change, right?
Correct.
We would have, and I'm sure, you know, we could certainly, work with our appointing authorities and make some proposals to the legislature. But in the meantime, to Governor Lidecker's point, yes, it's becoming more non-competitive, I hesitate to use the word subsidized, but it's not inaccurate. It is an indirect benefit. So it may not be a cash payment, but it's an artificially indirect lowering of a premium. And so the more competitive we could be, the more it will foster that private market. So.
Well, I think we should have put it on the September board meeting to discuss what policies we should focus on and how do we step. Obviously, we have to meet our statutory requirements because we will do that for sure. But to the extent that we can get away from policies that aren't required to be statutorily our responsibility, we should consider that and bring it up for discussion in the September meeting.
Well, and Chairman, I don't want to get ahead of you or the board, but you know, we there are ideas we could have and it would be publicly noticed, but a workshop, you know, some type of board workshop or retreat or something that's publicly noticed, but where it could be more of a free form discussion and not to presume on your calendars, but.
As we discussed, if the board desires to have that meeting, I'm in. It's a question of the other board members to be able to attend also.
Yes, sir.
I'd be in favor.
Okay. Well, there we got two.
All right.
Just one point of clarification though, and I agree with you on the workshop comments. We don't insure anything that's not statutorily required.
Looking at my team, I don't believe we do, but if there's a gray area.
I just, that caught my attention that as though we're a insurer. I just want to, just for purposes of clarification, it is my understanding that what we write in Citizens is statutorily required, A, and B, my other understanding is even on, which I think these are all fair points, but non-habitational commercial, that is subsidizing.
I appreciate the governor's comments, but just yesterday afternoon in committee, obviously came to light, and maybe you all knew it and I didn't, that we are getting pressure to write condominium policies that really don't meet our standards, and we're essentially writing them because of their political or actually public relations issues that we have. So I think we are writing business that we're not statutorily required to
that's an interpretation of the issue, but that's probably something we should have further conversation about on workshop. I did not interpret those comments to mean that we were presuming coverages that weren't statutorily required to presume. I was understanding that to mean that there was insurance that couldn't be placed by any private market, and there was maybe pressure coming on to Citizens to try to write this where they might not have thought it fit into the portfolio.
I would call it market pressure. I wouldn't call it necessarily political. I think the term was used, but political in the sense of there is a mounting public pressure when these folks have nowhere else to go, right? And I think Jay's solution is a pretty great one.
That was an issue. It was a line of business that we are in and statutorily required to be in. That really was about an underwriting, just individual underwriting decisions within that line of business.
That's right.
I think that's better. I think you stated that better.
Mr. Sear, we keep interrupting you, but you haven't fallen on your face yet, so I think it's good practice.
My time is up.
I think we can go ahead and inform Tim his time limit is up.
Next.
Now, one of the topics I'm going to get into a little more is the state of the market, and I'm going to discuss some of the indications that we're seeing that these legislative reforms really are working, and that Florida's insurance market is continuing to improve, and it's great news. But as we discussed, we've been asked, well, if the market's improving, you know, why have you made the rate, you know, the rate requests that you have to the OIR? And, you know, none of us, this board, I know Citizens staff, nobody is taking these rate increases lightly, but unfortunately, because our rates were frozen for several years, and after that, our rate increases were capped by the glide path, we have fallen behind. And our rates have been on average, not only not actuarially sound, but 30 to 40% below market. Could we hit slide 2, please? I'm going to breeze through these, but this looks at some of the historical, changes that Citizens went through throughout, since basically the big one was in 2007. But, prior to 2007, you used a top 20 analysis to ensure that our rates were, not only actuarially sound, but non-competitive with the private market. Back then, we were small, we were healthy, we were slightly more expensive than the private market. In 2007, and there were forces at work. I don't want to say this was done willy-nilly at the time, but in House, for various reasons, House Bill 1A went into law, and it rolled rates back to 2006 levels, and it froze rates, Citizens rates, until 2010. Starting in 2010, we were required by statute to limit our increases to only 10% per policy to allow, a glide path to actuarially sound rates. I think that obviously hampered our ability to remain actuarially sound.
If I can interrupt you.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The CEO for 1 second. The problem with the program was that we never got consistently 10% increases year over year.
Correct.
So the well-intended, we went to apply for those maxes in order to get to the right number. In my first year here, I will never forget, we had proposed a 3.7% increase. We should have been getting 20. And I don't think anybody on this board was there then. We ended up pushing it and getting 7.4% if I remember correctly.
I think so, you asked for 11 something and got
7.4, yeah. But it's still twice what 3.7 was. So that's part of the rationale. I'm just making sure that the board understands that we never were able to implement a 10% per year increase on the glide path. We were always hampered to do that by OIR and others.
And well, and how do I put this? So there's some detail in the chart, and you've seen some of the data, Chair. It's really all over the place, and there are just things that happen. And I know OIR certainly had a rationale for doing what they were doing, but it was very odd. I sat down with my team, and I would say, well, wait a minute. If this was going on this year, why did we – we got a great increase the year before. I don't want to get into the weeds, but it really is, it's a story and it's a saga. But I will say Senate Bill 76, SB 76 passed. That allowed us to do that 1% increase on top of the 10% until we get to 15% in 2026. And next slide, please. And in 2023, the law changed and reinserted the requirement that we be non-competitive, but it didn't define it as it was defined in statute before that says you basically look at the top 20 writers in a particular region and you need to be at the top of that market. So that's one of the things that I think we've had OIR has not only our regulator, but they've been a good partner in working with us, and we've been trying to get data to prove up this competitive analysis. And we'll see. Again, our rate filing will be completed by the end of the week. Next slide, please. This slide, you can see what the chairman was talking about earlier. This slide reflects the cumulative rate changes since 13. The industry, is in blue. Citizens is in green. In 2015, things were going pretty well. We really took no rate increases then. Unfortunately, we had litigation of non-weather water claims that increased drastically AOB. We asked for large rate increases in 16 and 17. Hurricane Irma made landfall with some out-of-control litigation that resulted from that. It pushed Irma's actual losses significantly higher than was forecasted by us or reinsurers, and reinsurance prices began to soar, and both Citizens and the private companies asked for rate increases to reflect these higher costs, but just because of the glide path, as we've been discussing, we did not keep up with the industry, and we just became more and more competitive and even cheaper than the private market. And that, of course, led to our growth in about 2020 and companies going under and a general decline in the market. And this, again, the purpose of this chart isn't to say, we want rate increases. It's just to show the disparity and how difficult it is going to be for us to shrink and for policies to return to the private market while you have, you know, while you have this disparity.
Yes, Governor Spotswood.
It'd be helpful to not only show what the percentage increase is, but what the actual cost of insurance is.
Okay.
If that chart included, you know, the cost of insurance per $100 of insured value so that we could compare ourselves a little bit better to the private market. It's difficult just to say you're increasing because we don't know what we're increasing from.
That's a good point. This again, this only reflects the increase, the cumulative increases, not so much the price.
And I would also comment that, and maybe you want to add color to this, Tim, if you weren't already planning on it, but it's, I think the chart really shows this, is my understanding from the carrier world that the need for that rate that you're showing on that slide had more to do with fraud, assignment of benefits, you know, one-way attorney fees, you know, various issues that Citizens has had to deal with than it did on weather-related events, notwithstanding the fact that there were some very significant weather-related events. And maybe you can add color to that.
That's 100% accurate. And Jay could come up and talk for, you know, for a long time about that and what he's seen. But that is absolutely correct. And you see, I think you see the results in it in the reduction in litigation. You've seen rate filings of private insurers who have been, of course, operating at actuarially sound rates. They are able, many of them have been able to file for rate decreases, because litigation, these litigation reforms really are making a difference. I mean, it's common and, you know, and I've heard reinsurers say this, many times in insurance companies here say it as well. You can model for weather, even the horrible weather that's forecasted. You can model for it. You can't model for fraud. And that it's been out of control, and that's why you saw the legislature take some really decisive action. The governor, with the support of the governor, and he signed it into law, and the CFO, everybody was really singing off the same song sheet because it was so bad.
And you made this comment already, but I don't believe, and I'm speaking as one board member, but might be speaking for all board members, I don't believe for a second our goal to try to get that green line up the blue line. Our goal is to get the blue line down to the green line.
Great point.
And the industry, by creating a competitive environment, again, fraud comments you just made regarding changes in the industry and the lack of predictability for the insurance carrier marketplace and what that meant, the extent that we're able to do that, and maybe, forbid, we actually get a break on the weather this season, which doesn't sound real good right now based on anything I see. You know, we want that blue line to come down and meet us. We're not trying to continue to raise rates. We need to try to get to a place where we stop having the need to raise rates beyond a certain point.
That's a great point.
But I think the problem, though, is, and no one likes raising rates, but our artificially low rates are sort of the devil's candy. I mean, it sounds good, but it's harder to bring that blue line down. Our rates are artificially low. You know, if you're looking at to deploy hundreds of millions of dollars of capital, and whatever you're, whether it's insurance widgets, and you say, well, how about that Florida marketplace? Do I want to enter that? Wait, the government there is subsidized. I got to compete with that? No, I'll take my money and go to a different market. And so that's the problem, in essence, is if we're to be a resident, a residual insurer, and we define that by 20%, every year that goes by that our rates are artificially low, we are increasing the size of that residual market by the mere fact that our rates are artificially low. We're causing that 20% as a snowball effect. And so no one wants rates up. That's clearly the case, except in terms of how this works for us to be an actual residual insurer. That spread is counterproductive to bringing that blue line down.
It is, and we're wrestling, and the OIR is wrestling, and the governor legislature with, you know, these laws that the glide path that's been on the books forever, and there is a uniformity and a commitment to market recovery. And again, what I do think it's getting better. Like I think that the, and I'll cover this in later in my report if I get to it, but it is getting better, and you do have a commitment, I think, from governor to legislative leadership, and the reforms have really started to make a difference. And again, as Commissioner Yaworsky's been out talking about this, you have seen rate filings start to trend downward, but we are, you know, are creating competition with the market as long as our rates stay where they are. And it's just a question of wrestling with, you know, one law that says we need to be actuarially sound and non-competitive and another law that imposes the glide path. So, Chairman, if I can move on. Okay.
And you can abbreviate too.
Again?
You can abbreviate if you like.
We'll take you up on that offer. So again, and we've sort of been harping on this, what our rates being where they are really is fundamentally unfair to the private market policyholders who, you know, through no fault of their own, our citizens policyholders, they're receiving a government mandated, in essence, reduced premium. It's unfair to the policyholders of Florida in the private market, because in addition to paying higher premiums and they've absorbed more frequent rate increases over the years, they also face the risk of an increased risk of having to pay on top of that if Citizens is required to levy an assessment, if we don't have enough surplus to pay claims after a storm or a series of storms. So we have to remember, I think this is an important point, there is no income threshold to be eligible for Citizens. Eligibility is based on the characteristics of the property, being insured, the location of the property. It is not the applicant's income or wealth, and why, and because of Florida law, you do have businesses and high-end condominiums and policyholders with multiple homes or rental properties in Citizens. Ideally, as I said before, if we were to function as intended, we would be much smaller in size. We would always be available to people owning properties in which the private market is not interested and who truly have nowhere else to go. But instead, you know, right now anyway, we do have policies that the private market would be interested in, but for our lower rates. So, again, what's the benefit to the citizen's policyholder? If we can be that true insurer of last resort, they have some place to go when the market is not interested in them. They may be paying slightly higher rates than the private market, but they have the assurance that we will always be able to pay claims. The other side of that is, I believe, is an obligation to the private market to do everything we can to reduce the risk that the private market is going to be hit with an assessment. And that's been our entire strategy and the EDI strategy in my entire time at Citizens, both during my tenure and Barry Gilway's before me. That's what we've been working towards. So trying to abbreviate my comments, Chairman, because we have covered a lot of it. Small citizens obviously means less exposure and a reduced risk of an assessment on, you know, the rest of the market, 85 to 86%, because we're, you know, 14, 15% of the market right now. Again, as we grow, we should be there. We should grow when the market is strained, but we should shrink as the market recovers, and that's what we're striving to do. Listeners, I want to say this again to folks listening in, as well as our policyholders, I want them to understand, and that's why we've gone through this exercise, to understand why we're doing what we're doing. Again, you all did not approve these increases lightly. We did not recommend them lightly. I know, as you know, OIR is going to consider carefully what we've asked for, but our belief is that to help ensure continued recovery of the property insurance market, we as a government-created entity, we have to stop competing with the private market, and our rate filing, we think our rate filing with the OIR fulfills our obligations under state law to at least ask for rates that do not exceed the glide path, but that will continue to move us closer to a point where we stop competing. That's all I was going to talk about on rates. I was going to move on to reinsurance unless anybody has any questions. And I am going to speed this part along because Jennifer covered it so well yesterday. The reinsurance market, reinsurers around the globe, they do recognize the improvements that they've seen because of the reforms that have been implemented in Florida. This year, both Citizens and the private market have seen rates level off in many cases. We believe on average, I think our risk-adjusted rates on average, Jennifer, aren't they down about 7%, 7.9%, which is great. Great news. I think it was very successful. You know, last year, if you all recall, our Citizens policyholders were facing the risk of a surcharge if we had a 1-in-4-year storm. of policyholders and non-policyholders were facing an assessment if we had a 1 in 9 year storm event. That didn't happen. This year, again, as we've discussed, it would take a 1 in 74 year event to trigger a surcharge and a 1 in 83 year event to trigger an assessment. And by way of comparison, Ian was a 1 in 20 or 25 year event, I believe. I think, Andrew was a 1 in 43 year event. So we're in pretty good shape. And I do want to congratulate CFO Montero on doing a great job. She and her team in very difficult circumstances. They worked hard and got us where we are. You did see, I think the insurance market at the reinsurance market at the very, very end started to dry up a bit because of the weather forecast that came out and got worldwide attention. But under the circumstances, but she did a fabulous job and I want to congratulate her. To go through the remaining slides, can we get the next slide, please? So policy count, again, you've seen this chart before, but as of June 30th, we had 1,213,495 policies and about $520 billion in total insured value. We had forecasted previously by the end of the year was to be at 1.24 million policies and $679 billion in exposure. Because of the reforms are working, things are going in a very positive direction. We've adjusted this forecast. We're barring the wind doesn't blow. We think that by the end of the year, we will be below a million policies. We'll be at 985,000 policies and $432 billion in total insured value. Again, barring any major storm activity or anything or any unexpected blips. And that's some good news. We have good policies and citizens that the primary should be interested in. And again, our goal is to get back down to that true residual market level. The other good news, and you've heard us say before, now that we're in hurricane season, the takeouts are going to slow down, and we're going to start to grow, and then takeouts will resume in August. But we're growing less than we did this time last year. That's good news too. So even though we're in a period of where we're going to expect to grow, the rate is we're growing at a slower rate than last year. So again, that's that general market recovery.
May I ask a question just on the slide?
Sure.
The total insured value, is that the increase relative to policy count, is that, would I be right to conclude that's as a result of non-residential commercial?
I think that's right. Yeah, because it is, I mean, the non-residential commercial is less than 1% of our total number of policies, but close to 10% of our TIV, our total insured value.
Essentially less policy and more value.
Correct.
Having an influx of commercial res and commercial.
Both. Next slide, please. You all have seen this slide too. It's good news. The number of policies assumed through DPOP through 2023 to this point this year has been about 408,000 policies. For 2024 alone, combined personal and commercial assumed policies is about 132,445 policies have been taken out, and the exposure removed is about $65 billion in exposure through takeout. Again, that's not only good for citizens' policyholders, it's good for the state of Florida to have that reduced amount of exposure. The map to the right shows, you know, the distribution of policies taken out. There's a good distribution around the state. It's healthy that the takeouts aren't just centered in particular areas, and it's healthy that you're seeing takeouts in Southeast Florida, as well as, you know, Broward, Miami-Dade, Palm Beach, as well as Hillsborough and Orange. These are areas that the industry used to tend to avoid, particularly in Miami-Dade, where you had, you know, proportionally excessive litigation, and that the fact that the market is interested in there is another good sign of recovery and that the reforms are working. I'm not trying to pick on Miami-Dade at all, but the facts are, the litigation rates are much, much higher down there. You have, you know, Ian, and you all have heard me talk about this. Ian did not even hit Miami-Dade County. It hit Southwest Florida. In fact, people in Southwest Florida evacuated to Miami-Dade. You have more Ian litigation pending in Miami-Dade County than you do in Collier, Charlotte, and Lee combined. And so that, again, that's pre-reform. But that's where you're seeing the reforms take hold and really, really make a difference, where there were pockets of frankly, cultures of excessive litigation, business and legal cultures of excessive litigation. Not trying to jam on, and you all know this. I mean, I'm a lawyer by training. There's a lot of lawyers, a lot of plaintiffs' lawyers that do it right. We're talking about attacking that cottage industry where we heard yesterday, some lawyers have been disbarred, there have been arrests, but it's really trying to get at these places where there's excessive litigation. Next slide, please.
Kevin, before he moves on, may I ask a quick question?
Yes, Mr. Governor Sponsor.
Do you have some estimates, or are you targeting some amount of depopulation activity that would occur as a result of the legislative reforms that were made
in
regard to preventing fraud?
Governor, you mean separating that as a part of just general market recovery?
Okay.
I don't think we've broken that out yet. I think that there's no question that the litigation recovery as well as the 20% rule are helping spur depop. But I could see if we could break those numbers out.
But you could tell him, but this is not what he's asking for, but you guys have the numbers at least. Pre-reform and the effect of reform, the amount of lawsuits filed on roof claims versus prior to. And I think I don't remember the number, but it's pretty severe.
And that could start, but we could gather that data for you, Governor.
Well, it'd be nice to be moving toward population as a result of that type of reform, which would suggest we need to look at other areas that can also encourage the private market to come back in as a result of suggestions we can make for further reforms to insurance laws.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So this slide does show the litigation decrease for non-cat litigation, non-catastrophic litigation, and assignment of benefits since 2015. These are specific to homeowners and dwelling fire, non-catastrophe water claims, so they do not include hurricane losses. Trending in a very positive direction in terms of new claims entering litigation, and it does explain why the admitted industry is more interested in DPOP. And you can see the litigation rates for the Tri-County region versus all other counties. You know, in 15, you had a 56% litigation rate. All other counties, it was 11. Now, fast forward to 2023, the Tri-County region, it's dropped to 16%, and all other counties is 6. So that's some pretty good data. Next slide, please. I'm almost finished, Mr. Chairman. So good news. You've seen this chart before, except this is updated for the first quarter. We try and monitor segments of select companies writing business in Florida, and we try and compare. So we're comparing apples to apples. We compare quarters because, you know, obviously in one quarter, underwriting gain or loss or income may be up or down because maybe they had a big expenditure for reinsurance or whatever. So we're trying to get their companies by quarter. And this is fantastic. This signals the market is improving. For the first time since 15, you have net income and a net underwriting gain. They're both positive and not in the red. And that's the first time since 2015. Next slide. Preparedness. I think your leadership team, our employees, we are prepared for hurricane season. Our catastrophe response planning, it is an enterprise-wide collaboration with all departments within Citizens. We've done stress testing. Stress testing includes a massive amount of activity and preparation that was conducted ahead of storm season. We do mock cat testing. Mock cat testing includes equipment readiness, staff training and preparation, call center stress tests, recruitment and training of just new resources, virtual deployment for independent adjusters, system load testing. And we believe we're ready. We respond to the critical needs of our policyholders if we do have one of these major events.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
But I'd ask if you could go back two slides to the carrier slide.
Okay.
Right there. I know the dip down in 2020 and 2021 represents a time period when carriers, national carriers, pulling out of the state of Florida, reasons you've already cited, weather, fraud, et cetera. You've already talked about the takeout program, but some of those are startups,
mm-hmm.
Existing in state only. I'm wondering if you're having any, can we be optimistic based on the fact that for the first time, net income and net underwriting, and that there are net underwriting gains, that carriers that previously pulled out of the state of Florida would recommit to the state of Florida.
it's early. So maybe this is the next year, but either how do you feel about that talking to national carriers? A and B, what are we doing to make sure national carriers are aware of this, the news on this chart, and why they should think about coming back into Florida?
So I will tell you, the chairman that's been a priority of the chairman, not to speak on your behalf, sir, but I know that you've had a big interest in us communicating this data to the national insurers. I do know, and the chair and I met with Commissioner Jaworski. That's been a major priority of his, is meeting with these CEOs of these companies, sharing the good news in Florida, trying to attract business back to Florida, and just telling the story. And that's what we are trying to do. And we're not just relying on OIR to do that, although I think that the commissioner is rightly out in front of that, but I know it's a priority of the chairman's as well for us to try and get in with these CEOs.
Follow up on that question as well?
Yes.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. So with the admission of so many smaller private market carriers, is that discouraging the bigger carriers from coming back into Florida?
I have not heard that it's discouraging or otherwise is a disincentive to them coming back. They're filling a vacuum, right? And I think that one of the focuses and not to keep coming back to the OIR, but I know that both the CFO's office, the governor's office, as well as the OIR have really sort of paid attention to these companies that are being approved to do business. I think they've been more zeroed in on making sure that these companies have the financial wherewithal, that they're not going to pop up, do business for a couple of years, suck a bunch of money out, and then the policyholders come back into Citizens. Again, the chair and I discussed that, and I know that is a priority of the commissioner.
That circumstance has occurred on several occasions, correct?
Yes, sir.
So that's the point I'm trying to make, this allowing those carriers to come in that maybe can't withstand a larger event and charging a lower cost than a bigger carrier would. Is that discouraging the bigger carriers from coming back?
You would think it might be.
Yeah.
That's a very good point, Governor. But I do know that the office has made the effort to really vet these companies and make sure that even above statutory minimums, that they have the financial wherewithal to come in and do business.
A lot of the carriers that he's talking about have actually filed for bankruptcy protection or have been taken into liquidation and rehabilitation. Because as a representative of this committee, I'm on the Florida Insurance Guarantee Association board. I can tell you, 2 years ago, I think it's 11 companies went into rehabilitation for the reasons that you're citing, you know, getting competitive and then not having appropriate reinsurance in place and not having thought through it correctly. So I think it's a fair point, but a lot of the, I don't know if I would call them reckless, but a lot of the players that really didn't have the fortitude are not there in the market now.
But we expected a handful of companies to go under last year. That didn't happen, right? I mean, it didn't happen. And you've seen that companies they're doing better. They're not going in, but we're not seeing the liquidations as much as you did the last couple of years. So
looking at those situations, Tim, would we have been better just taking on that risk ourselves? Those companies that failed, did that cost us money?
Well, I mean, if I understand the question, Governor, I mean, we don't want to, I mean, if they can be rehabilitated, great. And some, I don't know how many were able to come out of rehabilitation. We certainly don't want to grow unless we absolutely have to. There could be some Monday morning quarterbacking that would show that maybe there shouldn't have been time to, you know, the effort to liquidate and rehabilitate these companies. Maybe they should have just rehabilitated as opposed to liquidate. Maybe they should have just come to Citizens, but I would say
2020, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mr. Cereal, are you almost wrapping up?
I'm wrapping up, Chairman. So, again, we really feel like, last slide, please. We do feel like we're ready. We have a strong network of independent adjusting firms on contract with the infrastructure and capacity. Obviously, that's so critical for deployment. So after a storm, these claims can get promptly adjusted. We have 16 first notice of loss call centers on contract should we need such support within 72 hours notice. 130 employees trained and ready to be deployed in the event of a catastrophe. So, I mean, we're ready, and I have complete confidence in my team, particularly Jay Adams and Jeremy Pope and Christine Ashburn, those folks that are out front. I'll be with them out on the front lines. And again, I hope we don't have a storm. If we do, I would encourage you all to come out, you know, and visit us on a deployment. It's impressive. Our employees are just top notch. It's stellar. I think some of you may have gone out. I think, you know, Governor Butts did. And, I couldn't be more proud of this team and the whole company. And, that concludes my very lengthy report, Mr. Chairman. My apologies.
We did interrupt your tempo a few times.
Quite all right.
No worries.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would just comment that, I know I'm the culprit on, interrupting and, asking questions, but having said that, you know, I think we could make up time on some other areas, but
we will.
Since I've been on this board, that is, in my opinion, the most comprehensive and thoughtful presentation from the CEO in terms of just getting a full macro feel for all the moving parts. And I think it was really important. So I want to say thank you, and thank you for your indulgence to allow me to ask the questions.
That's why we have these meetings. Otherwise, we can't get our message out.
Well, I appreciate that, Governor, and but there's a mea culpa. I feel like it was important to do that for the public because I wish I'd have done that a little more at our last meeting. I'll be very candid. And I was just thinking about the meeting, and I thought there's questions, some really good questions that we've received since the meeting. And so that's why I thought, and I appreciate you all indulging me in going through that. I think we owe it to the public. So
thank you.
Thank you.